Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
All right, this might be a little different start to Zero Block 30, but I need to bitch for a minute. Because
Sergeant.
Jesus Christ, dude. This is probably the closest I've been to like letting the beast out of the cage since I've started working here. Our technical difficulties are out of control. It's not because our man Colby. It's not because of Brendan. It's just because we can't fucking figure shit out. We've been doing it for 70 goddamn weeks now, and I'm fired up about it. But I want to calm down. Like, I do. Like, I don't want to be that guy anymore. That's not who I want to be. It's not who I am. And when I feel like my blood pressure rising, you know what? I used to do this all the time when I was a leader of Marines. When I start getting really pissed, my shoulders start to bounce. And one of my old Marines, Sergeant Dockrell, he would tell like the junior Marines to start like getting the fuck out of the office when he would see like when I would be bouncing in my chair. He's like, "You guys are about to fucking get it. You might want to leave right fucking now." And that's how I felt about the podcast. But we're going to move on to a happy spot. I'm not going to spend much time bitching about it because that's just not who I want to be this week. It's the Super Bowl week. It's time to have fun. It's time to make some money. Let's just do it with MyBookie because MyBookie, the big game is here. It's time to cash in on the big bets. And this is the only ad read that you have to sit through today, by the way. So congratulations to you. Log on now for MyBookie.com and you're going – or MyBookie.ag and you're going to get in the action. Don't just watch the game. Lay down some money and be a part of it. Join me and thousands playing online with MyBookie.ag. And our boy Keith is launching – he launched yesterday. You can go find it on Barstool. It's probably still one of the featured blogs where he did all the prop bets. MyBookie.ag is also going to have the prop bets so you can check out what he had to say. Join us now and score free cash on your Super Bowl wager on the house. Right now, MyBookie is giving away up to $1,000 to every new player. Sign up today and get a 50% bonus on your first deposit. That's right. If you join with $100, you'll get 150 bankroll to play with. Use promo code ZERO to activate the offer. Play, win, get paid. Let's go. Zero Block 30.
God, Staff Sergeant's such a dick, you guys.
And I actually, I'm doing a new thing now. I talked about it with my buddy Clem on Podfathers last week. I'm fucking done introducing everybody. I went back whenever we had to find a little clip for just something. We needed a clip. And I went back through like 50 episodes of ZBT. And every single one, I start out with, "Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. I'm Uncle Chaps. I'm joined by Captain Khan, blah, 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 blah." I'm fucking done with it. Like, everybody knows at this point. Kate, I might have to still introduce you from time to time. But we got Kate, we got Cons, we got Bren, we got me. I'm done fucking introducing everybody. I'm just fucking done with it. I don't like to be redundant, so we're not going to be redundant anymore. Even though that claiming not to be redundant was even more redundancy than I normally would do. How are you guys doing?
I'm excellent because guess what? This is when being an officer is great because when things of this nature are occurring – you just be like, "Hey, you know what, Staff Sergeant, you got this." And I just walk away and let you guys handle all this, and I'll come back when we're ready to go. You take care of this because I don't want to get involved. I don't want to get angry. I'm going to stay in my lane. I'm going to walk out. I'm going to get a water. So that really didn't affect me all too much other than I was just growing a little impatient. But I trusted that Chaps would ultimately get it done.
Yeah. And as a corporal myself, I felt relieved because I know that deep down it's the civilian's fault. So, Brendan, thanks a lot for fucking that up.
There we go. Brendan's
hand up.
Yeah,
PFC
Brendan's,
Bren.
Yeah.
Lance Corporal like Brendan. It's like in Saving Private Ryan. You know, the shit rolls downhill. You know, gripes go up, not down.
Anyways, we got a big episode this week. We have one of my favorite Twitter followers, Angry Staff Officer. He's going to come on in a little bit. Actually, we're going to fucking move into that now because it's a good interview, and a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about is going to springboard off that. So here we go. Interview to start the show. No more redundancy. We're going to switch it up on you bitches. Let's fucking go. Interview time. Well, now on Zero Block 30, I'm proud to have somebody that I've been following for a while, and I really enjoy his work whenever big military issues come around. Like, I remember specifically reading some of his stuff whenever there was the transgender ban was in talk, or just about basically any huge military issue. He comes at it from a pretty balanced perspective where you can't really tell if he's a Republican or Democrat. It's just no nonsense, no bullshit, which is what we like here on Zero Block 30. Angry staff officer joins me, and he keeps a little anonymity because he's still a staff officer, so he doesn't go by his name. So we're just going to – what do we call you? Angry? What do you want us to call you?
I think usually just call me staffer, because it's like my – that's where I live in my penalty box of life.
There we go.
As an Army officer.
I wanted to have you on and just kind of tell a little bit of background, because we're real big on just knowing people's stories. How did you get involved? What made you first want to become a soldier, and then secondly become an officer for soldiers, a leader of men?
Oh, damn. We're going straight to the deep stuff. Okay, so why did I join? That was a long time ago. 9/11. Yep, that was definitely a thing. Family tradition of service. We've had one of us in just about every war. I think we missed Vietnam. But we hit pretty much everything back to like Indian Wars in the pre-revolution. And, just kind of something that was always sitting on my mind that I wanted to do. Like, there was no like crystallizing moment where I was like, yes, I will do this. I did have a weird story of like how I got, I mean, like, so originally I'll go ahead and say, originally I wanted to be a Marine.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually attended the first phase of Marine Corps OCS, when you're in college,
yep.
When you're a junior. And, no offense to the Corps, I realized that, we were sort of in different phases, the Corps being in the Corps and me being not so much that way. And so I elected not to go back for my senior year, but then I went like total backlash. I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to be Air Force now. So then I went to the Air Force recruiter and started working with him to be an officer. And then, like, as time went on, I realized, man, I really like anything that the Air Force has to do with, like, guns and, like, Humvees and running around in the woods. Maybe the Air Force isn't for me. And also that my recruiter just, like, stopped talking to me. I don't know. I just, like, cut off all communication. So I walked over to the Army. And they're like, hey, you're breathing, man. Awesome. Yeah. Sign up. What do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to shoot guns. I want to be in the infantry. And they're like, oh, you're a college graduate and you want to be in the infantry? You're an idiot. Come on, sign right. right up. You're perfect. So that's how I ended up enlisting back in 2008. Then,
I didn't know you were a Mustang.
Yeah, yeah. Then a couple of years later, I decided to go to grad school to get my second degree in history because, you know, one useless degree wasn't good enough. I needed to have two.
There we go.
And so I did ROTC and mercifully just 2 years of that because that was horrible. And commissioned as an engineer officer because I was tired of walking around everywhere and carrying my life with me. So I cheated and became an engineer officer.
Very nice. And you've been doing that for how long now?
I don't know. I just made captain, so 6 years.
There we go. So you, captain life, this is a very different time to be in the military, and I'm always curious of how you find the balance of talking about your political views because you're very outspoken about what you believe and what you think the Army should be doing or what the military in general should be doing. But then whenever you put those captain bars on and you put your cover on, you put the uniform on, you go to work, that's not the role of the captain to be explaining that. How difficult is it now when politics are so exacerbated that you
have to be everywhere. Yeah. It's everywhere. So like I come at it from a few angles. One, I think the military represents a certain set of values that we all agree on. You know, we've got in the Army, we've got our Army values. Like every branch of service has its own values that they sort of stick to. The biggest, of course, is like just integrity. Like that's the biggest thing. Like do what's right, say what's right. And take care of your soldiers. Like those are just kind of the key elements for all the services. So
super simple tenets.
Yeah, it's like the most basic stuff that you can think of. But then like everywhere else in politics, it just like diverges completely, and people end up like all over the place. So I try to be as apolitical as possible in uniform, unless it's a values issue. So if someone's just, you know, not living up to integrity, and it happens to be in a, or making remarks that are just, you know, yeah, I get it. Like people get offended by a lot of things, but then there's just like stuff that people say that you're like, why would you even do that? Like that does no good. One, it's not funny. Like if you can't even be funny, why bother? Right. It's not funny. It's inappropriate. It's out of place. It's setting a bad example. And really, like, we're supposed to be taking care of soldiers. So breaking down our soldiers and then demeaning them doesn't serve any purpose whatsoever. So like I'm apolitical, but if value stuff starts to come up, I get heated because I really think that's a big part of the way we live our lives. And in the military, and like the American people's put a trust in us with their children. So I think we have a obligation to not only train them for war, to go out and kill and break all the things, or in my case, as an engineer, build all the things and then break them. And then
off the top of your dome, just to give people an example, what would you define as like a value issue?
Gay bashing.
There you go.
I remember like when we got the first gay soldier and openly gay soldier in the unit, and there were some E7s. They're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you're gonna treat him like a soldier. Like, I don't know what you want me to do here.
I remember
just human beings.
When Don't Ask, Don't Tell ended, I remember when it ended, and I remember here we got it. I think we got a white letter from the commandant explaining what the new values and new rules were going to be. And for most of us, it wasn't even that big of a deal because you knew that there was people in your unit who were gay. You just didn't really give a fuck. And that that didn't change anything.
Right.
The people who were asked, I think that that's why the military is so great. It's such a representation of the culture that maybe 5% of the culture is assholes to gay people. Like if they're out in the open, maybe. You're going to have that 5% represented in the military as well.
It boils down to, can you do your job?
Right.
Can you do your job to the standard and above? Yes. Awesome. Fantastic. Come on over. I want you in my unit. Because, like, you know, I can go ahead and point out all the, like, straight dudes who can't pass a PT test, and then, like, the gay dude. Like, it's not about your sexual preference or really gender or anything. It's like, do your job.
Do your job. It doesn't matter who you are. Do the job. I don't care what your politics are, what you have between your legs or on your chest. Just do the damn job.
Right. And so that's what I look for in soldiers. Like I look for soldiers who can put aside a lot of the stupid shit and just like come to work ready to perform and to do this for our country. Cause we've got an awesome job. Like we totally have, like every time sit down and think, oh wow, I'm a company commander. Wow. I've got a bunch of high speed engineers. This is crazy. How did I get to this point in life? Like how do I have the capability to go and shape the battlefield with my troops? And it's a huge trust, and it's a huge thing. It's an awesome thing we get to do. So don't be a dick is basically my philosophy there.
And sometimes we like to have fun. Like I think that that's the part that I missed. When I got out of the Marines, what I really missed was the camaraderie of being with the people that I loved to be around every single day. Sometimes I hated them.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time I loved them because they were doing the dumb shit right along with me. You have a story of one time that you did some pretty dumb shit where you brought a beer to a gunfight and won.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
You want to tell us that story?
So that one is not actually military, totally military related, although it gives a good indication of like military training. You know, no shit. There I was. That's how all stories have to start off with. Because, you know, in the military, we are storytellers.
Either there I was or I was drinking a beer.
Right. Yeah. So, hold my beer and watch this. But like, we love to tell stories. It's like part of who we are. So yeah, there I was, at one of my best friend's bachelor party. And we were at his house. We weren't in the worst part of town, but we weren't in the best part of town either. So it's like 1 a.m. It's pretty clear that there's a bunch of dudes in this house partying because the lights are all on, there's music blaring, and we're all very loud, very responsibly intaking adult beverages at an accelerated rate, there of we course. Go. We did our risk assessment and everything. Everyone was wearing a PT belt.
As one and, does.
That's right. And we're all playing beer pong, and I'm lining up to take my shot, and for whatever reason, I was wearing a fedora. I'm not sure how that happened at some point in the evening, but...
If it's good enough for Belichick, it's good enough for you, my friend.
Oh, God, no. And all of a sudden, I feel this, like, blow to the side of my head, and I turn to my friend who's dancing beside me, being an idiot, to tell him how much of an idiot that he's being, that he hit me in the head. And as I turn, I see that there is a pistol pointed at my head about 3 feet away from me. And then behind the pistol, there is a man in a ski mask who is yelling something. I don't know. Skrillex was on very, very loudly, and I couldn't quite tell what he was getting at. But there's a number of things that you could do there. Arguably, I chose the worst thing because my instinct immediately went to, oh, near ambush. We got to turn and burn. So immediately turn and throw grenades at the enemy and then assault through. Because I didn't have a grenade, I had a beer. It was not even a beer bottle. It was a can of Yingling, with which I chose to turn and huck at the gunman's head. He ducked and opened fire, putting 3 rounds somewhere sort of dispersed through the living room. Jeez. And the weird things that you think about, like, in these situations, the only thing that, like, went through my mind,
like, this is all intentional. This was intentional.
This was not like a, oh, hey, it's a bachelor party trick.
So
it's,
it went,
oh, hey,
from dancing to, like, Beyonce to fucking getting shot at in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you knew the dude?
No. Oh, no, no, no. Oh. Sorry, this wasn't my friend. This was some random dude who broke in, yeah.
Oh, okay. I should have cleared that up. I was like, man, I didn't know somebody broke in. I was like, Jesus, your friends are fucking wild, man.
Well, we turned, and, like, everyone just thought, like, everyone looked, and they thought, this has to be a prank. Why is there a dude with a ski mask pointing a gun at us? It's got to be a bachelor party prank.
And with military crowd, that's... pretty likely, like, that somebody brought one and that they're going to act like that. That's
right.
Who they
so are. Someone's going to be an idiot. So I threw my beer. The dude starts shooting, holding the gun sideways, thankfully. And, like, the only thing I could think of, well,
I like side sights.
So I'm going, like, as I'm going, oh shit, of course I don't have a gun on me. That's great. Well done, me. The thought that's going through my head is I'm feeling like the muzzle blast on my neck, and I'm looking at the muzzle, and it's got sparks coming out of it. I'm like, man, this asshole needs to clean his weapon. That is so filthy. Like, these are the things that could have been my last thought. How messed up is that? That's what the military does to you, man.
Dude, one of my buddies is like a really active shooter, and every time he leaves the range, he hasn't cleaned his weapon in like a year. So he, like, goes to the range weekly, biweekly, and he sends me a picture of the weapon every time he's done. And as, like, a staff sergeant of Marines, it makes me, like, super triggered. Like, dude, you got to clean that shit. He's like, it still fires fine. I'm like, fuck you until the day that it doesn't, dude. Clean it. Just one time. Rub some, just
everywhere.
Rub some oil in it. Just punch the bore one time for me, please.
Oh, God, seeing the star chamber would probably just end your life.
Oh, my God, man. That's the worst. I think that affects senior enlisted leadership much more than the officers, because you guys don't get into weapons cleaning much. That's more of our role. Professional, though. Well, let's move into some professional time that was actually
some professional stuff.
You're a huge history buff, you said. 2 degrees in history, and that's what a lot of your... You want to tell us a little bit about your podcast before we get into that? Kind of set the scene there of... why you know about France and World War One and World War Two, because you are a history guy. So let's talk about what your podcast is about a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So the podcast I've got going on, it's called War Stories Podcast. It's with my co-host Aiden Dobkin. And we have an inordinate amount of fun putting that thing together because I've learned so much about the history of weapons, technology, and warfare. What we do is basically look at one single aspect of war. So season one was armor, like armored warfare, tanks. And we take a specific battle or engagement and we like do a deep dive on that to see like, how do humans react in combat with this technology? And like, how does the technology evolve from war to war? And then we like kind of pan back out and talk about the overall impact of that technology. So like I said, season one was tanks, and I learned more about armor than I ever thought that I would, even though when I was back enlisted, I was in a mech unit and we would see the tankers and naturally have to make fun of them,
right?
Because it's what you do.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh yeah, you can kill me going 60 miles an hour from a mile away, but you're fat. You know, I never said the infantry had the best jokes, but
they usually are around about somebody else's a pogue or you're fat.
Right. Right. You're fat. Oh God, don't run over me with your tank. Damn it.
Yeah.
So yeah, season one was awesome. Right now, season two, we are doing marksmen and like snipers. So that's been fun. Our last episode was on this badass Finnish sniper in the Soviet-Finnish Winter War in 1939-40, who was completely insane, had something like over 500 kills, like would do things like, you know, fighting in the snow, would put snow in his mouth so that his breath would, so that you couldn't see his breath when he was in his hide. And then he would just lay there all day long. And you're like, that dude is tough. He had like half of his face blown off, but they never killed him, even though like the Russians devoted like whole units to try to knock him out. So War Stories Podcast, it's a lot of
fun. That's pretty extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. It's some great stories in there. And, you know, one of these days we'll do a story on the Marines, but I don't know, like eating crayons.
I don't know where that came from. When I was in, dude, I never heard that. It's
you
like
do
a, it's a new phenomenon. I never heard. I hear it all the time now. I'm telling
I saw
you.
It on Twitter one day, and I'm like, oh, that's new. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's so new. I love it. Like, I want to be. I might make some shirts actually with a pack of crayons on it. Like, I actually,
honestly, I think
I'm gonna
you know,
do it. Yeah.
You know the Twitter account. I am the War Axe, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a great.
Yeah,
great Twitter
I think
account.
He definitely like took that to a whole new level with like no step on snack and eating crayons.
Man, I love that eating crayons thing. I wish I was. I would have totally embraced that lifestyle. I get Marines all the time in my mentions on Twitter talking about just finished up a big bowl of crayons. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? It took me like forever to figure out that's the new insult for Marines. That used to be jarhead, and now it's just straight up crayon eaters. I like it.
It is kind of awesome. Yeah,
I like it when other branches of service made fun of me for that kind of stuff. But you were in France and you saw how the French felt about the military in World War One and World War Two. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So so the military like sends you a lot of places, like some of them not so awesome. Some of them like just really awful places. Most of those are stateside, though. At least overseas is slightly interesting. Like Afghanistan was better than the month and a half I spent in Mississippi. Yeah, definitely. Now I've got a whole state pissed off at me again. But every once in a while you get lucky and you get to go someplace really cool. So I got to go to France a year or two ago to help out with it was some World War One centennial stuff going on. And, you know, France has gotten or bad rap, I think, over the past, I don't know, like ever since 9/11, like, you know, surrender monkeys and, you know, there's a whole litany of French jokes that you can go along with. And I don't exactly know how that took on like so much like legs the way it did, because we've been really close allies with the French for a lot of our history. Like if it wasn't for the French, we wouldn't really have a country because they bailed us out in the American Revolution when we were like, you know, eating crayons. Well, I guess like eating like papyrus, like stent, I don't know, whatever you had for paper back then, and eating quills, I suppose. But there's a lot of like stereotype of French people. And so, you know, you have those notions in your head when you go overseas. And we were over there and I was in uniform. And we were doing some stuff in like this farmer's field near this one location we were visiting. And of course, you know, a couple of vehicles and a bunch of people walking around in a farm field, like middle of nowhere. French farmers are pretty much like American farmers. They're like, what the hell are you doing in, you know, Francois's field?
Sacre bleu, why are you in my field?
Right. So they like come on walking over and they're like, what the hell's going on? They see myself, one of my colleagues in uniform, and they see the American flag and they just start talking really fast in French. I do not speak French. I do not pretend to speak French, and neither did my colleague. And so we asked the interpreter, like, hey, what are they saying? Are they happy, mad, hungry? What's going on? And he's like, yeah, so they are thanking you for World War One and World War Two. Mm. And we're like, thanking us? They're like, yeah, for the Americans volunteering to come over to help them out in both wars. And they are immensely thankful. And I was like, whoa, that's heavy.
Yeah.
That wasn't me, but you know, you're welcome. It was really humbling. I tell you what, like you talk about wearing the uniform being an honor and a privilege. I don't think we think about that much. Cause most of the time we're just like, yeah, all right, got it. Let us do our jobs. And you know, we don't want to think too much about that unless it's Veterans Day, in which case give me my free blooming onion.
There we go.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because we, at least speaking for myself, that you, whenever I was wearing the uniform, you're getting lauded for the people who wore it before you, not the ones that are currently right. wearing it. So you yeah. look at the thanks, like I always talk about how Marines have the reputation that we do of being fierce and the most fierce fighting force in the world because of the men who were on Iwo Jima. Like, and that's the reason right. why we have it. So everything that we have about our reputation is based on historical references, not current references, and current people fight to maintain that level of respect rather than earning it for the first time. And I think it's easier to maintain than it was to earn. Nope. And those guys went through insane shit.
Right. Yeah. It was really humbling, and it really made me realize like how we don't remember World War One all that much, but they do, and they're like super, super thankful for it. So it's really an eye-opening experience.
And that's secondhand knowledge. I mean, from World War One, for them, it can't be
yeah.
firsthand knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, they're all, you know, I think there's some people alive, like there are some people alive who were alive during it, but they were like four.
Right.
So
I couldn't remember. So it's secondhand, like appreciation that's passed down right. from parents to grandparents and then everything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Which is, it's just wild. Like to be able to have a, like a societal memory like that. And you know, for them, that's huge because they were occupied for 4 years during World War One and then occupied again in World War Two. And World War One was the big one with 4 years of occupation, massive losses. Like if we sustain the casualties in any war that the French sustained in World War One, I don't know if the American people would have had the stomach for it. Like once you get up into the millions,
right?
Like, you know, what's worth it. But, you know, for them, it was their home. And so they were fighting to protect their home. And then realizing that the Americans didn't have to join in that war. I mean, like it wasn't like World War II where we were attacked by Japan. And then the next day Hitler made a dumbass decision and was like, oh, I'll declare war on the U.S. Like, good job, moron. This is a great track record for you. Invade Russia and declare war on the U.S.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, but it was like, we volunteered to come over and help them. And that's something that they remember. So that one really kind of stuck home with me. And I kind of carry that one around in my back of my mind. Like, why do we do what we do? It's like you said, to carry on the honor and traditions of those who served before us.
All right. Well, we're going to end on a note. This week, it was big news that Elon Musk made a flamethrower. You being a history guy, I want to ask you, the whole squad is going to go into it in just a minute, but I wanted to ask you, if Elon Musk could take any other World War II era weapon and turn it into a mass-produced thing that we can all get our hands on for $500, what weapon from World War II would you want it to be?
Oh my gosh, why would you do that to me? There's so many. Any weapon.
Doesn't matter size, or you can't have an atom bomb. Other than that, you can.
Can I have a battleship?
Yeah,
I want the USS Missouri.
There you go. $500 battleship.
I want 16-inch guns that will provide. It'll clear a path for me on I-95.
There you go.
And that way, I don't have to worry about my commute.
All right, so I'll let the fellas and the lady know that you've got dibs on the USS Missouri.
Dibs on battleship.
There we go.
Don't let the Navy know. They know now. Oh well.
Yeah.
I'll make it an army battleship.
Make your own little army navy.
That's right.
Have army that going for you. Hey, and then you could call yourself a Marine because you'll be amphibious too.
I knew you were gonna go there.
All right, Stafford. We appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking the time. Check out his podcast. Follow him at Angry Staff Officer on Twitter. What's the acronym? How do you actually spell it out?
On Twitter, I'm at PPT Sapper. I'm a sapper who makes PowerPoints for forever because that's what we do.
There we go. Follow him there. You'll like his stuff if you like our stuff.
And you already sent me that file.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yesterday, an email.
Right.
Here's another.
And Chaps.
Yeah.
Real quick, is it okay if we be like, by the way, that story didn't get finished?
Because
I feel
absolutely.
Like people are going to want to know what happened. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, here we go. So huge shout out to Angry Staff Officer for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. He said a lot of really interesting things. I like his leadership philosophy. That's, to me, I think once you get a little bit of leadership under your belt, that's one thing that I really enjoy learning from people is how they mold their way of leadership. And him saying that he looked for value systems is a great way to approach it. I don't think that you can constantly inflict your morals on your troops, but you can instill some values, and you can basically demand values. And I think that he does that, and I like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because everyone's different, right? And everyone's going to respond to how you lead a little differently. I mean, in the Army, we have a little bit of leeway because, as you said, you can simply give orders, and soldiers, NCOs, ultimately have to follow those orders. But at the same time, I think to get the best out of them, just like he said, yeah, you want to look for people's value systems.
Yeah.
And I like his answer about what he would do if he was going to tell Elon Musk to make a modern-day World War II weapon and give it out, a battleship. Having your own fucking battleship would be pretty damn dope. I would like to have my own battleship. So I wanted to ask you guys, if you had to do a World War II weapon, let's do top two. If you had to do a top two weapon system that Elon Musk could break into the civilian market and make it only $500, no matter what you get, what would you do? Cons, we'll start with you.
I'm on board with the flamethrower for number one because that just seems very cool. I'm very much into fire, building fires. I think that is a common thing among guys that just like we like to burn things for some reason. It's very primitive. So the flamethrower for me is definitely number one. And then I got to thinking, and Chaps, you wrote a blog about this, about some of the World War II era weapons that you would like to bring back. And I realized my list starts and ends with flamethrower. That's it. Because every other weapon you mentioned, we have something that is a better version of that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about what the analogy would be, and it's when I see a really cool classic car in the street, like an old Corvette or an old Mustang. I'm like, yo, that's really cool. But then I think about, if I owned that car and I was driving around, I wouldn't like that I didn't have a GPS in there. I wouldn't like that I didn't have satellite radio. I wouldn't like that the air conditioning maybe didn't work all the time just as well as the air conditioning does now. And things probably don't feel as smooth as they do in vehicles now. So I'm going to stick with our modern-day weaponry because science has improved and weapon-making has improved. But the fact that we don't use flamethrowers as much in the military is a little disappointing, so I'd like to bring those back.
I agree with that, especially with the car. The car thing makes so much sense because I thought a couple weeks ago I saw this ad of it was like a 1960-something Woody station wagon that had like – it was
right.
All wood-grained on the inside. It was in pretty good condition, and they were selling it for like $2,000. And mm-hmm. I was like, man, I could sell my boat for like $2,000 and then get this thing. But then I was like, this thing's – air conditioner probably fucking sucks. It probably is not comfortable. It probably gets like 4 miles to the gallon whenever it's going.
Yeah.
Do I really want this? Like, I think having the novelty of having like one of the tanks that Brad Pitt drove in Fury would be really sexy at first, but then it's sitting in your yard, like fucking up your yard, and you look like a hillbilly because you got a big ass tank in your yard. Unless you have woods where you can hide it behind, then that would be pretty dope. Like if you lived in a property the size of like Tom Brady's property, and you were having people over, you had a super nice pool, it's like an infinity edge, it's looking over into the Hamptons, and then while everybody's kind of drunk, you're no longer drinking, so you're like, fuck it, I'm going to go get my tank out, and you drive it out and you start making people nervous, that would be a fun time to have a tank. But other than that, it's not very useful, and people get mad at you in your neighborhood if you're fucking up their roads by driving tanks just to go get your mail.
Yeah, but it would be pretty cool. Oh, there goes chat. You get like the helmet and everything, and then the earphones, and you're just like waving to your neighbors, like, hey, just going out to get the mail.
Waving at the kids like I'm Princess Diana, but just on the back of a tank.
Yeah.
And if your neighbors did have a problem with it, you could just point your little tank at them and say, really? Is there a problem here?
Yeah, just shut the just fuck up,
just adjust that
neighbors.
Turret.
Yeah. Your dog keeps shitting on my lawn.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, why don't you go back inside, Mrs. Johnson? I can't deal with your shit this morning.
Okay, what weapon would you pick?
So mine actually was in development, but it never really took off. But I was thinking from a business perspective, as a lady who's interested in marketing and advertising, have you ever heard of the bat bombs of World War II?
No.
I don't think that I have.
So this is something the Marine Corps ended up actually taking this program over and spending over $2 million on it before they decided it was ridiculous and decided to focus on the atomic bomb instead, which proved to be more useful. But after Pearl Harbor, there was this scientist in Pennsylvania who lived near these bat caverns, and he started thinking, what if we could find a way to attach tiny little incendiary bombs to bats and release them all over major cities in Japan? So then when they roost in all the buildings, they set all the buildings on fire. And this idea was viable enough that the Marine Corps spent $2 million on it back then. They really did look into it. But I was thinking, what if we attached neat little ads to bats and sent them out around Halloween? Something comes down flying around your living room and, hey, Halloween City, 20% off costumes or something like that. How neat would that be? I think that would really...
I like that. Anytime that you can incorporate birds into what you're doing, I think that that's a great idea. Because just like falconry, I'm on record as saying that I think being a dog handler is the greatest job in the military, because you go to work every day. Your first responsibility is to feed a dog and then play with it and walk it. And you hang out with a dog for your job. I would change my answer if I was big time into falconry. If I could have been a falconer in the Marine Corps, that would have been super dope. Like falcon bound IEDs would be incredible, man. Like if you could have like an animal that you just send out for hundreds of miles, or probably not hundreds, but 5-6 miles away, because you can't really do that with a drone, like as a handler, and you get to pet it
maybe
and hang
works.
Out.
I guess so. But then if you're talking about falconry born IEDs, you're ultimately going to kill that falcon, no? Or unless he just drops it off.
Oh, he's going to drop
it. I'm not a bird expert.
He's going to drop it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, as much as I am against, you know, wanting to beat Air Force, I don't want to harm any falcons.
And going back to our conversation last week about the animals, after we were done, I went down a big time YouTube hole of watching eagles fuck up wolves. Like they were
really
fucking them up, dude. Like they would, the eagles would be on top of the mountains. There would be these huge, like, mountain goats, rams, or whatever. And rams are known for their thick ass skulls. But these birds, because they're coming down at like 400 or 500 miles an hour, like so damn fast, that they would hit them in the head and it would kill the rams. And then there would be like a group of 2 or 3 eagles that would just come and eat them. And you would have another group of predators come around. The eagles would start swirling again in the air, and then the other animals are like, nope, don't want any of that shit. Like they would, there was ones where it was like 2 eagles flying with a wolf in their talons, and they were flying the wolf somewhere else to eat it.
And wolves are not small animals.
Wolves are not known for being pussies. Yeah.
No, not at all. And you know, you're talking about they're an animal that's not by itself. You know, pack of wolves to be able to pull one out of there is pretty ridiculous. And going back to last week, oh, wait, that's right. You guys didn't read my answer, so screw all of you.
That was a good
snooze,
time.
You lose.
That was a good
You know
time.
What's even bigger than wolves that eagles have been known to destroy?
What's that?
Patriots.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
Wow. Little shit talk. Little shit talk.
Little shit talking.
Yeah, have you ever seen the video of the eagle dropping a goat off a cliff? Have you ever seen
Yes,
like
I have.
He flies in, picks up a goat, and then just drops it off of a cliff, and then the camera pans out, and it hits, like, every other cliff on the way down, maybe, like, 500, 600 feet all the way down, and then it just cuts to the eagle just, like, picking at it on the ground, like, all the way at the bottom of the cliff. It's pretty, as far as, like, insane nature videos goes, it's up there.
Huh.
Cold-blooded.
Eagles, yeah. Man. Eagles are on the hot streak. I feel like they're definitely the hottest shit in the game right now, as far as that game goes, because a lot of people picked them. A lot of people pick rats. I think you got to go rats. I think that's the ultimate answer. All those eagles, you have that ground and the air, like, man, it's just fucking you up, dude.
It makes a lot of sense. And, you know, our friend Kevin made a great point. He's been doing this internet game a long time, doing this hypothetical game a long time. If anyone gives you 10,000 of anything, you got to go with that, just because sheer force is ultimately going to take over a lesser number of any other type of animal. So,
I agree with that. I think that that's just common sense. I think you got to take 10,000 of anything. I mean, I would take 10,000 Muggsy Bogues over 10 Shaqs.
That's a great point. Great point.
Muggsy Bogues is coming at you with a fury.
He was great in Space Jam. But as we're right on the topic, though, why don't we just get real quickly into it? Super Bowl thoughts, Kate.
Oh, boy, here's the part where I pretend like I know what I'm talking about, but I feel very confident in the Eagles' ability to crush the Patriots. I just feel like we're more fun. That's literally all
I like
got.
It. I like it.
Nick.
That's a good answer.
Big Dick Nick. Big Dick Nick. We
yeah,
have fun
I think
rhyme.
That should be your answer. Anytime you have a quarterback whose name rhymes with Dick, you got a chance.
Yeah, that is so sad.
That's
that,
what the problem with Blake Bortles was. He doesn't rhyme with Dick. Yeah. And Bortles doesn't really rhyme with anything.
Right.
Turtles,
no.
Like, but not problem. Even really. It's a stretch. You got to really fuck with the enunciation.
Yeah.
I mean, the Eagles are going to have to certainly play their best game, and we'll see what happens. And I don't know. I'm just tired of the Patriots winning. Like, Alabama winning every year, that's boring to me. Patriots winning every year, that's boring. I do think it's the NFL. It is possible that the Eagles can beat the Patriots. I do think the Patriots probably are the better team, but I do think it's possible that the Eagles can win. So we'll see how
it works. It's not like Foles sucks. Like, he could put the ball on the spot and they run, and that's the type of thing you need to have movement for the Patriots to have struggles with you on defense. His little run action plays that he does, and he's very, very accurate. That can nickel and dime you, and they have Alshon Jeffrey is a good target. And their running game is a nice 1-2 punch. I think that they'll have a good a shot as anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a stat from Smitty the other day that their run-pass option, Foles, is 93% completion rate on that. So, yeah, it's possible that they can beat them. And I think the Jaguars showed that the Patriots are not invincible. Obviously, they didn't beat them. But they are a team that you can score on. They are a team that you can stop. So we'll see what happens. And I think it's important to note that although Foles is the backup, he's now had some time to gel and develop some chemistry with his receivers. And you saw that, I think, in the NFC Championship game, as opposed to when he came in when Wentz first got hurt. So we'll see how that extra week in practice also plays a factor into this game, but you never know.
And he's been in that offense. It's different if it was somebody that hasn't. He was in the offense before when he was in Philly. He was in it again when he was in Kansas City, and now he's back with Pettersson again. So, like, he's been in this offense forever. It's all about timing at that level, and he knows the timing of the route. So it's not like it, and he's been there for 7 weeks now. So let's move on to something different. The Marine Corps constantly has a talk about tattoos. If there's anything that fires up young enlisted members very specifically, it's the tattoo policy. The Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Neller, came out this week and said that he would revise the tattoo policy of the Marine Corps if the recruiters came to him and said that they were struggling to make mission because of the tattoo policy, because the Navy's policy is looser. Everybody's policy is looser. The Marine Corps has the most strict of all the branches tattoo policies. Maybe the Air Force is a little bit, but the Marine Corps is pretty strict for what you would consider. I mean, look at me and how I look. if I looked the way that I did now, I would be admin processed out. Like I couldn't do it because I have tattoos that are bigger than the face of my palm. So that's how we could do it. Cons, what are your thoughts on tattoo policies?
First of all, I do not have a tattoo. That is due in part for two reasons. One, I never had a desire. And two, my parents, just growing up the entire time, they were very strict on tattoos, piercings, what have you. And even to this day at my age, I'd be afraid if I got a tattoo that my father would hold me down and take sandpaper and rub it off. So I'm
shout out
not
to Big Al
for tattoos. I'm not for tattoos as it is. And also, too, there's probably only maybe two or three tattoos in my entire life where I've looked at them and thought, you know what? That's a really cool tattoo.
The fact that you don't have a West Point tattoo is shocking to me.
Yeah. Well, I got enough other paraphernalia and clothing that it more than makes up for my lack of West Point tattoos. But I do, I should say, I do have some buddies who have some cool Army football tattoos that I do respect. But anyway, I also think this is something that would be much easier if you just made a broad policy across the Department of Defense, as opposed to like the Marines are more strict than the Navy and what have you. I don't think it's something that should be branch specific. I think it is, whether you're in the Marines, whether you're in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, whatever, you are still representing and wearing the uniform of the United States of America. So why can't we have a policy that covers all of that the way we have policies on some other things?
Kate?
I would like to say we're Marines, we're badass. So what if we have sleeve tattoos? But I also know Marines would fuck that up and get things that, you know, you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. Yeah. And I just know that it would spiral if they did. I can see why they want restrictions on it and everything. As the proud owner of a Shamrock Tramp stamp tattoo.
There we go.
I would say,
oh my goodness.
Big coming out party.
I would just say that was not fun in boot camp. So I can only imagine if the drill instructors did not like that. I can only imagine people coming in if they really relaxed the standards. Boot camp alone would be tough. But yeah, no, and I also saw some heinous barracks tats that were done that even still when the policy was in place when I was in that they couldn't. Marines were still getting them where they weren't allowed to have them. So imagine allowed it, they would be getting things that, I don't know.
It would, exactly. They give them an inch, they would take 10 miles. We had guys that were doing it in Iraq. We had a guy who had somehow had a tattoo needle and was giving guys tattoos like in one of the tents on a regular basis because he was practicing because that's what he wanted to do when he got out of the military. So I do think that they would take advantage of it if you loosened and laxed the policy even further.
Well, as somebody who has a shit
I was going to say, what do you think?
As somebody who has a shit ton of ridiculous tattoos, I think that General Neller is a liar or he is talking to people who have no idea anything about the Marine Corps. Because the fact that the Commandant of the Marine Corps is saying, I am going to the recruiters and telling them, look, if you guys come to me and say, we can't do this job, sir, then we'll change it. There is no fucking way any recruiter, any recruiting command ever says they can't do something unless the Commandant changes it. Because the entire mantra is mission accomplishment. They are not going to give the excuse of tattoos. They're going to go out of their way to do it. There's no chance that any staff and CO or officer says that ever to the Commandant that I can't do this because of a policy. No chance. Not a shot. I mean, it's just so far outside something that a Marine would do that it blows my mind. They just absolutely would not say that. Ever.
No, yes, and can I say
he's almost setting them up for failure.
I mean, it's not even setting them up for failure, but it's just like, I mean, if you're
well,
the
no,
cop,
he's full of shit.
He's full of shit, yes, because he knows that they're not going to say it. I mean,
right.
The ridiculous nature of being a general and just being a general, you could be, for civilian listeners, it goes, be my little general. So brigadier general, you could be a brigadier general, one star general. You don't walk into a Marine Corps barracks or building if somebody knows a one star general is coming. There will not be a speck of dirt anywhere in that building, guaranteed. And that's a one star. When you're talking about a divisional level with a two or three star, there hasn't been a piece of dirt in that building for like a month because they know that you're coming, and every single staff NCO is enforcing damn near indentured servanthood levels of work for the junior enlisted to make sure that it's okay. When you're the commandant of the Marine Corps, these two and three stars start prepping their bases weeks in advance for the commandant to come. And that's just for a state of cleanliness. If it's for a state of readiness, they are not making excuses at all about anything, especially something not as silly as a tattoo policy. I mean, I just can't imagine Neller's face if they actually did come to him and they're like, General, like, they're like, General, we can't do it because this motherfucker wanted to join, but we said no because he had a big old dick tattooed on his leg. Like, we really wanted him. He would have helped us meet mission, but he had a dick on his leg, so our tattoo policy is against that. If you could change that, we can let the guy with the dick on his leg in, and then we would have met our numbers this month. Just not going to happen. Not going to happen.
No.
Yeah.
And can I just, you were talking about how he must be like a little out of touch in some ways. Can I read the statement that he said?
Yeah.
It was like the most grandpa statement. He said, "This is not an episode of History Channel show Vikings. We are not tattooing our face. We're not a biker gang. We're not a rock and roll band. We're not Maroon 5 lead singer Adam Levine. You can get you can get 70% of your body covered in ink and still be a Marine. Is that enough?"
No, it's not enough. Let me tattoo what the fuck I want. Like, I agree. Like, don't get your face tattooed. Even if they said you cannot have a tattoo that is exposed when you're wearing dress blues, when you're wearing dress blue alphas or bravos, long sleeves, coats, all that shit. If it's not exposed during that, wear whatever you want to. Other than that, like, who gives a, I think it's intimidating. Like, when, and it's a naval tradition. Like, it's a huge, that's why I don't think it could be Department of Defense specific, because Marines and Navy specifically, tattoos are interwoven in the history of what we do.
Yeah. Chaps, I will say, with the intimidating, and I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here. On the one hand, I agree, because I've even said in recent years, Army football has gotten more kids with badass tattoos. I'm like, there's got to be a correlation there. We're winning more games. We got better players, and these kids got tattoos. I kind of like it. But on the other hand, if you said to me, do you think they are professional or unprofessional, I would say tattoos, very generally speaking, are unprofessional. So I have to side with General Neller here that if you're telling me you can tattoo 70% of your body, which is obviously nearly your entire body, just don't do it in these certain places, yes, I do think that is enough.
And I think that that's going to be – I think in the generations past, that was the predominant view, that having tattoos were unprofessional. I think with our generation, the millennials, Generation X, Generation Y, like coming up, Generation Z, I think that that is going to be an antiquated idea, and tattoos won't be synonymous with professionalism because there's so many people who will have them.
Chaps, let me ask you this. Let's say you took your daughters to school one day and you walk in and your daughter's teacher has a Mike Tyson face tat or, you know, a teardrop coming from her eye. What is your immediate thought?
Well, I think face tats are a little bit different. That's what I said. I think face tats are so far outside the realm of normalcy. I mean, the percentage of population that has face tats is going to be so much smaller than people who have sleeves. I mean, for example, if you go and I go to Austin, Texas, for example, the odds of you having an elementary school teacher who doesn't have full sleeves is going to be extremely low. I think that a lot of it is geolocation. I think a lot of it is the appropriateness of the tattoo. Now, if I got a big old forearm that has like a vagina, like with a very specific clit, like on it, like so you can see it, I could see that being unprofessional. But as far as like normal stuff goes, especially when it's, I think that they should loosen it and say, hey, if you get stuff that's within the tradition of the Marine Corps, Navy, or Army, or Air Force, then we're all about it. Like, for example, whenever I was going up for a Meritorious Staff Sergeant Board, I had just gotten a huge tattoo on my forearm. And the tattoo policy had just been released. It was released like 2 weeks before I got it, but it was just a white letter. It wasn't actually like the full-blown tattoo policy. I was on the board, and one of the sergeant majors, he said, hey, Sergeant, what's this big tattoo about? Didn't you see the white letter? I said, I did, but do you want to see it? And it was a big tattoo of John Bassalone's face. Now, right. If you want to promote motivated people, have them get those kind of tattoos, because you're not getting John Bassalone's face unless you're ate up about being Marines. That's my favorite Marine quote of all time in a movie, by the way. The Marines in Guantanamo are fanatical. About what? About being Marines.
About being Marines, yeah.
You want fanatical Marines.
But see, I think you're opening up just such a can of worms when you're talking about, like, ah, that Bassalone tattoo, that's okay, but the women's clitoris tattoo is not okay. I actually got to tell you,
that clitoris tattoo on my forearm helped me get promoted. They were like, hello, Lance Corporal Mangan.
I think this has to be a situation coming from a leadership perspective. You got to be black and white, because if you are ambiguous and it's subjective, like, oh, that one's okay, but that one's not, then you just get into all this turmoil and all this discussion that could just be avoided if you say, hey, listen, no tattoos below the elbow. Or, you know, no tattoos above the neck.
I think that's how I view parenting too. Like, I think that there's easy way to parent. Like, it's easy to say you're going to do what I'm telling you to do because I'm telling you to do it. It's a harder style of parenting to explain, to give guidance, to bring about. So I think that if you have these black and white policies, these yes or no answers all the time, it really takes away some of the ambiguity of, like, what you could actually do. And I think that if you encourage the traditions, you can't say that we encourage you to be like the Marines on Iwo Jima, but also say that you can't have tattoos because that's unprofessional. That doesn't go hand in hand. The Marines were getting World War II tattoos on the ships heading to there because they were warriors. I don't think that the idea of professional warrior has gone too far, I think. I think we can't focus on the professional warrior too much with appearance base. Let's focus on conduct. Let's focus on having a warrior ethos that fits being a Marine or being a soldier or an airman or a sailor, and not worry so much about what ink is on our bodies. As long as it's not vulgar, and I think the Supreme Court has it right, that you can't define vulgar, but I know it when I see it. I think that fits in more common sense. Train the leadership, not the juniors.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's harder if you leave this ambiguity in there. So you're taking something that is difficult as it is. To train and to operate a military is a very difficult task when you consider the things that we are asked to go do. So if you, on top of that, you give them these rules that they then have to interpret, I think it's just an added roadblock where you could alleviate all of that by just giving a very clear-cut policy.
Well, you motherfuckers get paid the big bucks to make those decisions, so make the decisions. I don't give a shit about making shit easier for an officer.
We get paid the small bucks to break those decisions and fuck them up. So happy to keep doing that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, that was a good conversation. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to us for having a good conversation on a podcast where we're literally paid to have good conversation.
Yep.
I'm going to pull up something right now. I should have had it pulled up before, but I want to move into a different type of conversation. I'm not going to share a name, but there was a post that I saw on Facebook from one of my former students who, whenever I was teaching at the dog school, who posted. I think that when I was talking to Angry Staff Officer, one of the parts of the conversation that stuck out to me was that we've been at this game for 15 years now, and we oftentimes can forget the pain and struggle of those who are lost. So it's a risky maneuver for me to read something this long on the podcast, but I'm going to do it anyways. Here we go. 5.5 years ago, at just 22 years old, David and I purchased our first home. Although we lived in four houses together before it, this one was actually ours. A brand new 3-bedroom, 2-bath on just about 1 acre, with intercoastal water access and 5 minutes to the beach. After what felt like the longest cross-country move ever, we finally settled into our home. The first few months were spent constructioning a dog run in the garage, finishing the rooms, and of course building an obstacle course for the backyard. Let's be honest, David got as much fun out of it as the dogs did. It wasn't long before David was assigned his dog, a dog team, and a deployment, off to the trainings that lasted weeks to months and only long work days that seemed like they never would end. I probably spent more time alone in that house than with him, but when he was home with us, he always made the best of it. From bike rides with the dogs to the neighborhoods to finishing and kayaking in the intercoastal waters, we were so thankful and blessed to have such a beautiful place to call home. We all celebrated one birthday in the house, me first, then some names I'm not going to mention because they're actual last names. We had few friends over for Thanksgiving, a modest gathering, but special nonetheless. We had Christmas together. They're just weeks after David and Flex's official certification and the sudden loss of his grandpa. More training right around the corner and a deployment soon to follow. We enjoyed our quiet last Christmas together. We were happily surprised by a visit from Matt and Tyler at the house the week before David deployed. Karaoke was sung, lots of beers were drank, and all the fun was had before we saw David off to his second deployment. The front door I was heading out of to meet a friend for dinner when a casualty officer and a chaplain pulled into my driveway. The couch where my friend and a fellow Marine's wife, Lauren, spent the night before. The kitchen I stood in and called my best friends to tell them. Everyone vowed that they would be there if I needed them. The driveway my dad pulled into after catching the next flight to North Carolina to get me. The home was cleaned by so many wonderful women, some I knew and some I didn't, who came to take care of it from a funeral before I flew to Colorado for the funeral. The lawn my neighbor mowed and took care of while we were in and out of state. The neighborhood was filled with friends who invited me over for dinners and Bible study. The living room was my mom, the dogs and I slept in the couch at night, and we made a road trip back to Colorado. The final goodbye to our very home, our first home, almost a year to the day after we moved in. Yesterday I officially closed on the selling of our home, a bittersweet moment. Although others have lived in it longer than we ever did, it will always be David's in my home. There was a time in 2011, whenever I was an instructor at the schoolhouse, and every single week, it seemed like, we were getting reports back that Marines were losing their legs, that they were getting just fucked up, that the IDs had become so involved that the dogs were missing them and that we had to fix our training. There were certain things that they were doing, burying them in a certain way, where it was becoming more and more difficult for the dogs to locate them. And we oftentimes can forget that we hear the name the first time of the week. Connor and I read the names last year of the people who died. But then it kind of moves out of the public conscious. And it moves out of our sight and the things that happen inside our brains after. Like, I still hear those stories. I mean, obviously, fucking cried just now. And thinking about the pain that she goes through and moving on with her life from being 22 years old when she was told that her husband and high school sweetheart was killed in Afghanistan doing what he loved. It's such a traumatic thing that so many people never recover from. Losing that type of love is something that she'll never forget. Now, she's this woman specifically has tried to move on with her life and like do different things. It's been 5.5 years, but it's clear writing a letter like that that it's something that she will never get past or never get over, and it's something that I'm sure that she doesn't want to. And I know that we all have friends who were killed in action and were lost. It's important to remember 15 years later that PTSD is one of the things that's absolutely running rampant among veterans. It will continue to because we see horrific things. This week we shared Bell's What's Talk. I encourage you this week, if you're a veteran who's listening, to go out there and get some mental health care. If you're a civilian who is struggling, go out there and get mental health care. There's people who care about you, who love you. Suicide is an epidemic in the country, and we take it seriously on this podcast, and we take it seriously at Barstool as a whole, and we want to help you. Our DMs are open. We will help point you in the right place if you so choose. But I just wanted to share that story because I thought it's incredibly powerful to remember that 5.5 years, something as small as selling a home that she hadn't even lived in 4 years could still bring about those memories, because every time she loses something like that, it's like, I'm sure it feels like losing another piece of David.
Go ahead, Kate.
Sorry, the thing that really blew me away about it was that you said she was 22, so she's still in her 20s. The amount of grace that she had to point out, the whole end of that ends with the people who helped clean her home, the neighbors who mowed the lawn, the neighborhood who invited her to dinners and Bible study, her family who surrounded her. She ends something so difficult by looking at all the good people and all the good things that came out of it. And I feel like that's such a testament to the kind of person she must be, that that's the attitude she has chosen to follow through with this. Even though I'm sure it's still incredibly difficult, I was just so, that just made me stop and look at the things that I complain about and like, what am I grateful for? There's so much. If she could find things to be grateful for, then, you know, it just really makes you stop and think.
And this dude was somebody who was fucking beloved by the community. He was such a great young Marine, passionate. I mean, so passionate that he built a fucking dog run in his house. Like, he's the only one that I knew who had done something like that. He loved his job. He was loved by the community. And when he lost his life, it was one of those things. The dog community is so small in the Marine Corps that everybody basically knows each other. I mean, still now, when people come to the school, they know stories about me, and not because I work at Barstool, but just because the community is so small that we all basically know each other. So it was something that really ripped through everybody, and that's why it got to me. I mean, just imagining her face and how sweet she is. She is such a sweet woman, and having the casualty officer pull up, it just brings about those moments that you remember from, like, We Were Soldiers, whenever when they get out of the taxi cab and she starts screaming at the door. And that's what goes on in real life. And it's been happening for 15 years. And as much as we want to beat the war drum and go to war here or there, these are fucking people, man. And they leave at home wives, husbands, children, moms, and dads.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember that we talk about veterans with post-traumatic stress, but the family members, the Gold Star families, they experience post-traumatic stress as well. And I'm sure that amazing, powerful message that she wrote was very cathartic for her. But it's something that they're going to have to live with the rest of their lives. So if you know anyone who has lost someone through the service, you know, maybe just reach out to them too. And just, you don't have to make it blatant like, hey, I'm checking in on you because of, you know, what happened. But just, you know, just from time to time, just say, hey, how are you? And you don't even realize what could be going on with them in their lives and how far something like that, a gesture like that, can really go for families that have lost a loved one in battle. So don't forget about those Gold Star families is ultimately what I'm saying.
And I'll tell you, somebody who does that goes above and beyond and makes them love even more. I wrote about how I don't like fireworks during 4th of July. 4th of July night, I got a call from Kyle Carpenter, and he was like, hey, man, I just want to make sure that you're doing okay. Like,
and I mean, and what was going through your mind after that phone call?
Just that Kyle's like a superhuman, that he's basically Marine Corps
Jesus. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, pretty incredible. All right, guys, good conversation this week. It turned a little bit from me being angry to having a little cathartic, and that's what happens in the platoon room sometimes. So we'll meet back here next week. Hopefully I won't cry. That'll be cool. All right. Sound the retreat.